Why is it after like 28 years I cannot get my timing down on this? You know, same thing every week. Can't do it. You know, this whole Starbucks thing is so unfair because you can bring your Starbucks to the gun range. Just saying. So, what do you know?
Live from Kansas City, Kansas to Phoenix, Arizona. It's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, comedian Stephen Merchant tells us how to pick up the ladies, all the news that isn't, and the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know is provided by PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the host of the 883,593,927 second quiz, it's Michael Feldman.
Nice job on that number there.
Almost like math.
Is that your biggest number you've ever announced?
Probably.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's cool. That's how many seconds it's been, though. So that's,
really?
Yeah.
That's a lot of math you did.
A lot of seconds under the bridge. Yeah, that whole Starbucks thing and guns and stuff, you know. But they do. They bring. I'm told that lots of guys will bring their Starbucks to the shooting range, so they expect to be able to take their gun to the Starbucks. It seems only fair. Many of the Mocha Java Skinny has been knocked over by the kickback of an AR-15. In other news entirely, a brain-eating amoeba suspected in the congressional water supply as a result, the House votes to defund health care and defeed the poor. Those are the two latest things. It's mollycoddling. If you feed them, it's mollycoddling. That's basically the feeling there. Feeding the poor just encourages them, so this can only be good. In other news that isn't, Starbucks now says you can pack, but only if you're happy to see them. But they ask you to please use a stirring stick and not your Beretta for your Frappuccino. There are a lot of knockoff Fool's Gold iPhones going around, so watch out for that. That's Fool's Gold iPhones. Okay, I guess not. I'm sticking with my gold princess phone. You know. It's little, it's lovely, it lights, and it's gold. All right then, okay. The Dow Jones goes through the roof at the thought of another government shutdown because not enough is written about the great inertia of the American system. Things go no matter what. Okay, never mind. The judge rules the Tennessee parents can name their baby Messiah, but not Deshaun. That's going too far, another Deshaun. You know, if you name Messiah, though, it's going to be hard to find a girl that your mother thinks is good enough for you. That's the only problem. Meanwhile, a Jewish woman in Tennessee now wants to name her baby Micaiah. So that's what they call the wind out there, you know. I won't sing it. It's not in voice today. The CEO of Beanie Babies owes $52 million tax judgment on an offshore account registered to Allie the Alligator. Pope Francis says everyone should march to their own rhythm method beat. Also suggested he was open to gays having abortions, which I thought was rather... tapering is now off because, as with any stimulus, you got to leave it in as long as possible. That's what it says here. I don't know what you're upset about. The older roommate was stabbed for endless loop of playing the Eagles' Peaceful Easy Feeling. Really loosen his load. Okay, in legal news, the Facebook like is protected by the First Amendment. Damn! Those founding fathers! Foresight. Conservative alternatives to Obamacare called Yo Mama Care, where the patient receives a series of insults from healthcare provider. Escalating insults, you have to match them. The Obama administration is trying to counter a widely held belief, misconception, that Uncle Sam will conduct prostate exams under Obamacare. That's been on TV. Did you see that recently? It's been on TV. Must be true. John McCain's Putin op-ed was so good he will become a regular columnist in Pravda. He'll cover, you know, human interest, fishing, vicious diatribes, upcoming events. Two columns a week is a lot of effort. You know, you gotta have something in there. Stephen Hawking now says his artificial larynx was speaking for itself when advocating assisted suicide. Actually, his larynx would have said that too, I guess, as come thinking. We already have assisted suicide. It's called medical care. Thank you. The Italian cruise ship Costa Concordia was pulled over onto its other side, so there's a whole new problem now with that, huh? Larry Summers out, Suzanne Summers in at the Fed. Baby boomers, $15 trillion in disposable income and not a shirt or pair of pants that looks good on you. Tim Tebow to the Grenoble Centaurs in the French Second Division League. Although foosball really wanted him badly. Paula Deen has seen the butler 7 times so far. Cried every time. The Cubs' magic number is down to infinity. Herb Kohler's $6.8 billion, something to think about while you're using one. Okay. No medical marijuana in Wisconsin, but the medical soybeans are looking good. And the naked Milwaukeean stuck in the clinic air duct in an easily explainable situation. That's all the news that is, and thank you so much. Naturally, you remove your clothes. Because it's a tight fit with your clothes on going into an air duct. Pretty obvious to me, and anyone from Milwaukee would understand that. Stephen Merchant is online with us, and I'm very excited about this. His new thing is coming out, and it's called Hello Ladies, which is actually based on a stand-up thing that he's done for many years about his inability to say the right thing around females, which we know is not true. He's on with us right now from Los Angeles, and let's say hello to Stephen Merchant. Hello, Stephen Merchant.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm all right, you know, getting by.
Yeah? Are you on a big promo tour now? Are you going around and on the hustings?
I'm doing some promotional stuff, and I'm still kind of editing the show as well. I'm wearing all the hats, writing, directing, producing, acting, editing.
Yes.
Hoist by my own petard. I don't have time to hoist my petard. I'm too busy with other things.
What do you know what a petard is? This has been vexing me for years now. When you hoist your own, what is your petard exactly?
I was hoping you'd know. I have no idea. I just like to use the phrase so it makes me sound smart in English. Is it some kind of gallows?
I have no idea. You're asking
that
me,
would,
but
that would make sense, right?
It would, but it's Shakespeare. Who knows?
He just made up words, and we're supposed to be impressed by that.
We
all make up words.
Didn't they teach it at Warwick? I thought you might have learned that there, because you were in, weren't you in that particular course of study?
I did a literature studying course, but it was film and literature.
Film and
so
literature.
It was pretty lightweight. Yeah, it was basically watching films.
Was it film and literature, or film or literature?
Film and literature. It was two leisure pursuits that they tried to pass off as a study.
I do have the Warwick Connect here. They keep sending me this. I don't know why. I must have contributed at some point. And do you get the Connect?
I don't think I do. I don't know what that is. Is it some kind of university magazine?
No, it's a little release they do every so often to try and raise funds, I guess, or something. And this one has you in it, says Warwick Connect. Warwick Connect. The traces, university career of one of the UK's finest comedy talents, Stephen Merchant, BA Film and Literature, 93-96. You got the 2-1 there, did you?
Yeah, that's not a great score. But, you know, I was busy. I was doing other things. You know, I was failing to meet women.
Yeah. And you're on W963 on The Steve Show. Of course, that's what you're mostly noted for there.
Right. Yeah, that was a radio show that I hosted while I was there.
Yeah. And that was mostly a music show, wasn't it?
There was music, but we tried to do some comedy and stuff as well. It was my first sort of, you know, my first foray into sort of doing comedy that people might actually hear. No one did because it was university radio, but yeah, we made an effort.
It was just AM, right? So.
Right.
We have one here at Wisconsin. It was like dorm radio. It went over the electrical system through the outlets. That was how it was broadcast through the outlets.
How did you connect to it?
Through the outlets. That's the only way you could get
that
it.
Means.
Yeah, so that was a limited audience, I guess. But you know.
What, you stuck your finger in the outlet and just hoped for the best?
Or whatever you had there at the time. It was college after all, you know, whatever you want. Recently I saw you, by the way, in Drunk History. And what an amazing portrayal of Lincoln in Drunk History.
Thank you. Yes. They needed someone with the right level of gravitas and dignity to play Lincoln.
And height as well.
And height. And they came to me, and I refused to trim the beard I had at the time. So they just kind of colored in the bits of the beard that Lincoln didn't have, flesh colored. It was much like Daniel Day-Lewis's portrayal.
Yeah.
Fully committed.
Yeah. By the way, don't you think Drunk History is the worst? It's like the best bad idea ever. You know, it's a terrible idea to have drunken people, you know, provide the whatever the actors need to speak.
Right.
But it was unbelievably funny. It was great.
It's an amazing idea. Yeah. This guy Derek, he just got people drunk and they would tell stories of true life history, and then they would as you say, they would reenact it with real actors just mouthing along to the drunken commentary.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it's just hysterically funny. Well, it's obvious why, because drunk people are hilarious.
Yeah. At least to themselves.
Yeah.
What lines did you get as Lincoln? Did you recall any of those lines that you had from it?
It was something along the lines of, John Wilkes Booth is looking at me weird. This is weird.
Good stuff.
It was something along those lines.
Yeah. Now, this Hello Ladies, basically, you do a stand-up thing, or you've done it anyway, called
right.
Hello Ladies. Basically, your problems with the ladies? Or your successes?
Right, yes. It was stand-up show that just... and I started doing stand-up again after many years of leaving it behind and realized that most of the stories I was sharing with the audience were stories of kind of romantic misfortune. And then somewhere along the line, that got turned into a TV show for HBO, which is basically the same idea. Me, as a nerdy guy in Los Angeles, trying to score with the beautiful women of LA, and inevitably striking out.
Now, there's no truth to this on a personal level, I presume.
No. Why would a English nerd who studied film at university ever be unsuccessful with women? No, of course. No, it's drawn from real life. It's not a direct, you know, I don't play myself in the show. I'm a kind of web designer. But it's drawn enough from the real life experience of kind of, you know, just, you know, particularly when I was younger, being awkward around the opposite sex and never quite knowing what to say.
But knowing what not to say.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's the sort of theme of the show. But, you know, and it's also, you know, it's about the idea of kind of, I think, you know, there's something about the modern age which invites us to think that, you know, if we went to Los Angeles and we hung around in the right parties, we could be married to a beautiful movie star and we could be behind the red velvet rope at some exclusive party. And,
yeah,
you know, the reality is that you can't really access that world unless you're a celebrity.
Yeah, with a model and in a limo
right,
who additionally has a PhD in philosophy, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. We have a little bit here, a little audio clip from. Would you mind if we played that just for a minute or two?
Sure.
Give you a sense of what we're talking about here. Hello, ladies.
Hello, ladies. My name is Stuart. With me, my best mate Wade, right there.
Hi, Wayne.
Wade.
Yeah, as in Roe versus Wade. It's a famous case about a woman's right to determine.
They know what it is. No need to bring up abortion until we need to.
My wife just asked for separation after 11 years.
It's getting a bit gloomy again straight away. Maybe head to the bar.
No, that's
please,
okay.
Ladies, it's our pleasure. Get to the bar, sir. Off he goes, one of the good guys. Unfortunately, he's forgotten how to talk to beautiful women. I, however, have not. Good evening. Where are you guys from?
From here.
Can't do anything with that. What about yourself?
Seattle.
I love Seattle.
You spent time there?
Never been. I just met from films. Sleepless in Seattle.
It's
thinking something with Denzel Washington?
I don't know.
No.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because Seattle is actually the suicide capital of America. I don't know if you know that.
No, I think you're wrong.
I think you're wrong. But let's find out. Let's settle this once and for all. Suicide. Seattle.
We have to get going.
Yeah. You're going to go? Well, give me your number and I'll text you the answer.
I don't have a phone.
You don't have a phone?
They're leaving?
Yeah, they are leaving, mate, because you brought up abortion and completely ruined the mood.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well,
I'm sorry.
That's what happens.
You know what? I'm not feeling it. I'm going to go.
Okay.
Thanks.
Oh, that was a good one. Wade, as in Roe versus Wade. Who plays your hapless friend there? Who's that?
That's an actor called Nate Torrence, who's very, very, very funny.
He's great. And that now that might be the role that you might have had in the past, being the hapless friend. But this is a lead for you. Is this your first lead in a production?
Yes. And there's a certain pressure about that, and a certain anxiety. You suddenly realize you're sort of being judged on things that you've never had to worry about before, like how likable you are and do other people have any empathy for you and whether you're sufficiently attractive. But luckily I'm playing within my wheelhouse. As I say, it's the awkward English guy, so it's not like I'm playing Hamlet.
Yeah. And your friend Ricky Gervais lowered the bar on attractiveness, so that...
Hey, come on, leave the guy alone.
By the way, did you know him in his boy band days?
No. I met him much later, yeah. Oh, People don't realize this, but he was in a new romantic early 80s synth band. And the other shocking thing people find out when they see like video clips of him in those days is that he was very good looking. He's very kind of svelte and kind of cheekbones and
all that.
And then, it's kind of extraordinary. I mean, talk about letting yourself go. I mean, that guy, wow.
Are you, do you have a production company together? Are you like partners in a legal sense?
for certain shows that we've done, we have. Yeah. But we are not really the sort of people that are very adept at the business side of it. You know what I mean? Like the idea of running a production office and having staff and a coffee machine and meetings, that all seems very daunting.
But you are not joined at the hip creatively.
No, not at all. No, I mean,
because his hip would be an entirely different place than yours, anyway. So.
Well, also he has been in a. People have asked me why is he not involved with this project, but he's actually been lucky enough to be in a relationship with the same woman since he was about 21, 22. Wow. So he's got no experience of kind of the bad dating and the trying to pick up girls and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't really be a fit for him.
Yeah, but he's had other setbacks, I'm sure, but that make for good comedy. Because comedy is all about your personal setbacks, isn't it? Somehow.
I think it's all about kind of taking revenge on the world, taking revenge on yourself when you were awkward and young and a teenager and a loser, and taking revenge on the sort of, on just all the kind of awkward things that have happened in your life. And I think also sort of, owning them, and kind of taking the uncomfortable parts of life and making light of them. I don't know, it somehow makes your experience of those awkward things kind of ebb away and...
And then when you have a character actually to flesh out, like Stuart Pritchard, so then you have to provide that other material that makes that understandable, right? The way he behaves, you got to provide some understanding to why that occurs, right?
Right, and I think in his case, and I think there's a lot of people like this, and I've certainly maybe suffered from it in the past, although I would say less so now, is that idea of kind of, the building up this fantasy of what you think your life should be, and that your fantasy life is, that you're married to a supermodel, as you say, that's also got a PhD in philosophy, and that you own your business, and that you're kind of respected, and you walk into a room and people's heads turn. And I don't know. It's very easy to be seduced by that idea, and of course his failing is that he's set his ambitions too high, and if he just settled for what was more achievable in his life, he'd be happier. But he's allowed himself to be seduced by these ideas of glamour and sexiness and sophistication.
Yeah, and then he has, like, of course, this roommate, this woman who's his roommate, who actually is the absolute perfect woman for him. If it only could be realized, right? It's sort of like
There's a whiff of the will they, won't they in that. You know, I mean, I've always been a fan of that in TV shows, Moonlighting and whatever else. But, but you know, she has her own problems as well. You know, she's a kind of, I mean, you can't move in L.A. without running into actors and actresses, obviously. And so she's a kind of struggling actress who's perhaps sort of, her moment has slightly passed. She never became the star she wanted to or the big successful career that she dreamed of. And so then she's sort of confronted by that moment, which I think a lot of people are in their early 30s, which is kind of like, what do I do now? You know, where's my position in the universe? You know, we're led to believe in the modern world that you can go out there and you can do anything, you can travel, you can be the person you want to be. And actually that can be very daunting if you're not quite sure who you want to be.
Yeah, plus she's quite intelligent, or very intelligent, and has to deal with all these women who are completely empty of any intellectual, you know, achievement whatsoever. And she wants to have a salon, for example, and shows them the Potemkin one night on a Saturday night.
Right, she shows them Battleship Potemkin, but they'd rather just obviously be out partying.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, unfortunately, that's, you know, and it's not a fresh observation, but you know, LA is riddled with men and women who are let's say, you know, they're, I mean, vacuous is probably too nice a word. there's some pretty dumb people in Los Angeles. Man, I don't know if you spent any time there, but I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Some of the morons.
It's probably a handicap to have intellect.
I mean, it's the only thing that levels things out, right? That very beautiful people are dumb. Because if they're smart as well, then that's not fair.
what is her name, by the way, that actress?
Her name is Christine Woods, and she's great. She's really dynamite.
Terrific. She's terrific. And sort of like in Extras, when Ricky Gervais's character, had this sort of roommate and best friend who was a woman, and she was just fabulous. And you think, why didn't two of them sort of get together, you know, because they obviously care about one, but it never really happens.
No, I think that's partly because, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, as soon as you put a male and a female character together, people are always assuming that they'll end up together. But in the case of Extras, we wanted that partnership to be more like sort of Laurel and Hardy, you know, one idiot leading an even bigger idiot.
Yeah.
And the idea of those two idiots then kind of making love just seemed creepy.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, the way it ended was pretty horrible. I mean, you know, they talk about how to end a show like Breaking Bad, which is very big here.
Oh, no, careful now. I don't know. I'm way behind. I'm only on season 2.
No, I won't say.
I
won't. Don't. No, no spoilers or anything. Okay. But, you know, when Extras ended, I mean, she ended up working and cleaning washrooms. And he became this insufferable, horrible person who went on Big Brother and started hating all the people he knew before. And did you guys do that?
Well, we I think we're slightly drawn to these kind of little morality tales, you know.
Yeah.
And in Extras was all about, I guess, was born out of our experience of celebrities and show business. And you know, when we did The Office, that was a sort of surprising success for us. And then suddenly we found out that people like Kate Winslet or Samuel L. Jackson had seen the show, which was weird to us. We found out that David Bowie had seen our TV show. And it's like, in my mind, David Bowie has that kind of lightning bolt painted across his face and is still kind of Ziggy Stardust, you know, wandering around in a magical world.
Yeah.
The idea that he would actually stay at home and put on a DVD was incredible to us. And in fact, I remember we tried to get him on the show, and he did actually end up doing the show, and Ricky phoned him up to ask him to be on the show. And David Bowie answered the phone and just said, "Sorry, Rick, I'm just eating a banana." And it was amazing to us. We were fascinated by the idea that David Bowie just ate bananas. That just seemed so pedestrian and un-rock star-like that his wife, the beautiful Iman, would have to go and buy some bananas for David because he was busy working on the song.
Yeah.
And so I guess our experience of suddenly being encountering show business, there was, for all of the nice, cool people like David Bowie, there were all these sort of self-centered and kind of egomaniacal people.
Yeah.
And so in the case of Extras, we were trying to, you know, make Ricky's character become the kind of monster that so many celebrities do, and then kind of learn his lesson and back away from that. So in that regard, I think, as I said, it's a morality tale.
Well, it makes sense from that point, but from the point of view of audience, it's a terrible thing. It's like when they ended Seinfeld and they were all in this prison in Mexico, and people really resented that. Or The Sopranos, they ended it, and you don't know what happened to him. Was he shot? Was his whole family murdered? And you know what I mean? So from an audience point of view, it's like, how dare they? People take it personally, you know.
Well,
because you love
the
characters.
I think that's it. I think you sometimes forget when you're making the shows that people are investing in them that way, and that they see them as kind of, you know, as friends or as they buy into that world.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when you're making the shows, you forget that because it's just a bunch of actors, you know, and you're stressing about them, the costumes and the deadlines and all the rest of it. And you sort of forget that people are actually going to watch this, hopefully.
Yeah. So, I mean, Stuart Pritchard is not going to turn out to be a mass murderer or can you assure us of that
goodness.
Much?
No. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll send you an email if we go that way so that you can prepare yourself.
So this is still actually being worked out. I mean, how many episodes do you have actually filmed already?
They're all filmed, but we're still editing the show. It starts airing next week, so we're still busy kind of cutting the show and finishing it off.
Yeah. It's very hilarious. And it's not like anything we've seen before, actually. It's sort of like it, but not. Is for you in general, is there a problem between the American sense of humor and the British?
I've never really noticed that. People say that there's a distinction. Yeah. I've never really noticed it. I mean, a lot of my comedy heroes were always American people. Woody Allen and, you know, Groucho Marx and Bob Hope. Well, Bob Hope was actually born in Britain, but, you know, grew up here. And so, I've never really seen... To me, that's kind of there's smart humor and there's dumb humor, you know, and those seem the distinctions more than anything to do with you know, born in a different country.
But don't you think you have more leeway over there? I mean, for example, you talk about you know, guys who dress up as nuns, for example, wouldn't play so much in America. You know, I don't know if it's been done, you know.
I know what you mean. I mean, there's certainly probably more freedom on British TV to say things, to say the unsayable. Certainly American network TV seems very conservative, but it's weird. It seems like you can have gruesome shows like CSI with kind of bodies being kind of discovered every week and, you know, and very kind of unpleasant scenes of violence. But the idea that you might ever say something slightly naughty about sex is just obviously shocking.
Plus, I mean, you can be mean about someone in England, I think, if it's funny, if it's actually witty, you know.
Right,
That's pretty different.
I guess so, but again, you see, I've always, you know, when you think of someone like Groucho Marx or even someone like Bill Murray, you know, so much of what they do is born of kind of cynicism and, you know, and being kind of a smart aleck and saying the kind of cutting remark. And you know, they were always huge in America. So I don't know. I don't know. I've never quite analyzed it. But
Because one of Stewart's problems seems to be that he says these things that are actually very funny, but they're really sort of mean to an American ear, perhaps. Or especially to an American woman's ear, you know.
Right.
But he actually is being funny. You know, he's funny.
You know, I think he has a certain degree of wit. Yeah,
yes.
But this is something else I've always been very anxious about is because, you know, I suppose one of the traits of Britishness is being very sarcastic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and using sarcasm a lot and being self-deprecating. You know, in England, you go on a date with a girl and you can say, oh, God, I'm such a pathetic loser, and she laughs. And you say it to particularly a girl in L.A., you say, I'm a pathetic loser, and they just look at you and ask for the check. Like, why am I with a pathetic loser? It took me a while to kind of judge how much irony and sarcasm I could get away with.
Yeah. Have you actually done the dating scene in L.A., or is that just how you imagine?
I've done a little bit of it. But it's... It's very weird. You feel like every woman is looking over your shoulder for the next best option.
Right.
Which is hard for them. It's hard for them to look over my shoulder. I'm 6'7". So they just more explicitly peer around my thin body.
Yeah.
I feel like I can spend time working in L.A. and then go back to London where it's, you know, it's full of more normal people.
Yeah, you're actually 2.01 meters, I understand. That's
right.
What it says in the bio. You always get that 0.01 makes a difference. It's like a quarter of an inch or something here. But
well, you know, being freakishly tall has always been, that's something that sort of has governed my life, I think. You know, it's amazing what an impact that has on you, particularly in your adolescence, being kind of at least a foot taller than everyone else. Makes you very self-conscious, which is probably one of the reasons I went into comedy.
Yeah, that incident in Warwick where the cleaning lady was wearing her boots, was that...
That's right. I have size 15 shoes, and on the first day at university, you know, when you go to university, it's a good opportunity to reinvent yourself, you know, and present a new version of yourself to a new bunch of people. And so I was proudly thinking that I was kind of fooling people into thinking I was cooler and sexier than I was. And I came back to my dormitory to find the cleaning lady was wearing my boots and just clomping around, going, "Oh, I'm a giant!" And then all the other people from the school just laughing, openly laughing.
That drove you into comedy if you weren't before, I would imagine.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
I was once, it was New Year's, and I was down in the center of London, and London is dense with people at New Year, as you can imagine, probably like New York City, just full of people in every direction. And I'm stood there, and I'm like a foot and a half taller than everyone else, so I can survey the scene, I'm checking things out, and I see this girl looking at me, and I think, here we go. Oh, and it was about 5 minutes to midnight, and she came through the crowd, and she walked up to me, and she looked up at me, and she went, hey, are you going to be here for a while? And I said, yes, I am. And she said, great, because my friends and I have arranged to meet back at you. And I swear, about 10 minutes past midnight, a group of kind of people just started to gather near me. And if I took a step to the left, they all took a step to the left. And eventually this girl returned, and they all kind of chatted and talked and got in a cab and drove off. And I went home.
Oh, man.
It was, yeah.
Have you used that yet? And that'd be a good scene, I think.
We should put that in the show. That would be funny. Yeah.
And really, you're a radio guy, really, basically, aren't you? Wouldn't you say, more than anything else? Seems like you keep going back.
I think certainly that was where I started out in radio, and I've always enjoyed radio, and I think there's a great deal of freedom in radio. There's so many people involved with television, it's such a big operation, but radio, you can just show up, you don't really have to shave or put on a decent suit. I don't know how you're dressed now, but, I never would.
Yeah, nothing much.
You're just sat there in your underwear in front of your audience.
No, that's not me. That's not my thing, I guess. So your musical taste, you get to impose them on an audience. That's a pretty powerful thing.
Yeah, so something very... I used to like playing music. I can't play music. I can't play a musical instrument, but I liked playing records at people and kind of... and giving them... the idea of exposing music to people was very exciting. And now I don't have a radio show anymore, so I just have to... I just force them to listen to my compilation CDs in the car. I just keep driving around and not letting them go home.
But I listen to the Steve Show, the remaining episodes that still exist in some form.
Cassettes. Oh, this is the college radio show?
Yeah, the Steve Show.
Jeez, wow, I haven't heard that for years.
Yeah, that's pretty good stuff. But the music kind of startled me, the musical selection. Most of them are not bands we're not familiar with here, but Exile was definitely in there. I Want to Kiss You All Over, I think, was in there.
It was, right.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. And I noticed that turns up on the new show as well. I Want to Kiss You All Over. It's like the outro music.
Yes, part of the musical decision on the new show was we imagined that this character probably grew up, as I did in the 80s, and the idea of like sophistication and sort of adult glamour and sexiness was probably, those soft rock bands of the early 80s, and so there's a lot of Hall & Oates and there's those kind of people, because we just assumed that was what the character's sort of soundtrack was when he was growing up. Probably his parents listened to it, and his image of America and particularly of Los Angeles would have been soundtracked by Kenny G's saxophone and George Michael and stuff, so we've sort of allowed that to be like the kind of starting point for the music.
Yeah, so you were sort of raised by the music.
Yeah.
And I know this Warwick connector, they talked about, they asked what you'd be doing if you weren't doing what you are, and they said studying philosophy, using Facebook, and blogging. So,
is that really? That's what I said?
That's what
really?
You said, apparently. Wow. You want to take that
I
back?
I don't use Facebook. I don't know why I said that. I'm not even sure what Facebook is.
But if today, today's student, that's probably you would. You'd probably be blogging instead of being creative as you are. I'll go out and just blog,
I guess so, on a blog, or maybe on doing stuff on the web. Yeah, I guess there's just such an outlet now, isn't there, for have your voice heard.
Yeah.
There's just like a noise. Just opinion. It's just everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think I'd probably throw myself in that mix. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on Twitter and it becomes like a vicious, it's a horrible habit. Instead of thinking anymore, you just tweet it. It's by Twitter. Tweeting is basically what it is, So anything you might want to develop, any thought you might want to actually in writing, is already gone out, and it's gone, and it's lost. So.
Right, but it's also gone in that kind of weird abbreviated form where you don't spell all the words, and you can't really develop any bigger idea because you've only got 140 characters.
Right. So it kills thought is what it does. It kills writing, so among other things.
Yeah.
But what interests me, I guess, is the philosophy part of it. So do you you have a philosophical bent. Is there a particular philosophy?
I listen to a lot of podcasts about big ideas like that, but I can never remember any of it afterwards. You know, it's one of my great failings is that I would like to be much wiser and more profound. I'd like to be able to quote poetry to you and the great thinkers, and instead I can sort of remember pointless film trivia, you know, that's of no value to anyone except, you know what I mean? It annoys me. There's a movie. Why does this piece of information float in my head? There's a movie from the 60s, a disaster movie called Krakatoa, mm-hmm. East of Java. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's wrong because Krakatoa is west of Java. Now, that information is of no use to me, and I've spent years trying to get rid of it from my head. And yet, here I am again, regurgitating. Whereas if you ask me to kind of encapsulate the philosophy of Wittgenstein, no idea.
Yeah.
Listen to a podcast about him yesterday. Got no idea.
It's sort of like pop culture. They have pop culture as a course of study right now in school, and it's the same sort of thing. Pop culture suddenly is important. You know, it has meaning that we're not even aware of.
Well, I also wonder, I don't know, I can't remember a time before the internet. So I don't remember how did we survive before the internet? And it's not like we're using it for important stuff. I was having a conversation the other night, and we were trying to remember, I don't know, who played the dad in the movie Teen Wolf. And we can go on our phones and find that information out immediately. But we couldn't do that 20 years ago. That conversation would just dry up, and we'd move on to more profound ideas. And unless you knew the man who was the dad in Teen Wolf, you didn't have an answer to that question.
Plus,
or you had to go and rent the movie from Blockbuster. But now we just instant access to pointless information.
Yes, plus we used to have those endless conversations. You know, that guy who was married to what's-her-name, who was on the TV show that was on the Westinghouse Network. You know, those can go on forever. They used to, but now you can whip out your phone and say, oh, yeah, it's...
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I Stuart Pritchard once again, and he's trying to get in that club, and they Google him.
They
could find nothing on Google, so you couldn't get in.
That's right.
Well, it's a great show. Hello, ladies, and it's on HBO. It starts on the, it's starting soon, the 29th, I believe.
Next Sunday evening.
Yeah, on HBO. Look for it. Hello, ladies. Stephen Merchant, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nice talking with you. Stephen Merchant, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, ladies. Yeah. Okay. There it is. It's funny. They sent me a little.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the funny
This
guy.
Disc that they warn you is a $250,000 fine and 5 years in federal prison if you distribute.
You better be careful.
From HBO. Yeah.
It's a couple of guys in suits out in the hallway. I didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah. So, okay then. How about a little tune here?
Okay.
Anything with leaves in it, or
fall,
or London?
Jeez,
anything?
This is called Lullaby of the Leaves.
I love it.
Once again, it's Michael Feldman.
We're back! Oh, you dropped them. You can ask her to read those. We're going to play the What Do You Know quiz that you've been waiting for right now, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. Before we can do that, we have to know who can. Yes, come on.
Who can and cannot participate in that quiz. To do that, we have...
Nancy Oval.
Are you from around here?
Menominee, Wisconsin. The four disclaimers. Number one, all questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Number two, thank God for the Boilermakers. Number three, persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. Number four, All opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
Beautiful job. Thank you, dear. Keep that. We'll serve you. Let's see the hands of those of you who want to try them at the quiz. A chance for you to win. Fab. All right, you're convenient. You're right here. Come on, sure. What the heck? Okay, and you yip. You're yipping a lot.
Yep.
You're a yipper.
Yep, too.
Oh, you're a yipper and a yupper.
Yipper.
So are you, where are you from? You're not a yipper, are you? That'd be too much.
No. I've been there, though. Yeah. I've skied there. Yeah. I'm originally from Darlington, Wisconsin.
From Darlington. Beautiful Darlington. And your name is?
Margaret.
Margo?
Margaret.
Margaret. Okay, Margaret, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
Because I went to physical therapy school with your wife, Sandy.
Oh, no. Give me a good reason now.
Because...
All right, that's good enough. But come on up. Physical therapist. Have a seat there. Oh, yeah. Okay, there. All right, I'll tell her I saw you.
Okay.
How's that? Okay.
Maybe she's listening. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Sandy. No, she doesn't listen anymore. I'm not sure why that is. Other things to do. I'm sure she's busy. She has her own thing. And are you doing physical therapy these days?
I am.
Yeah?
Yes.
Where are you at?
I'm right here.
Yeah.
Right now.
I know that.
I practice physical therapy in Platteville.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
You do.
Yeah.
Some mixed results there. At the former Gunderson Lutheran?
No, there is no such thing as that in Platteville. I have my own clinic, actually.
Oh, yeah. No, it's near Platteville, isn't it? Lutheran? Gunderson Lutheran?
I think that's La Crosse, maybe.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's a couple hours away to the north.
All right, that's good. And for kicks, what do you like to do, Margaret?
Oh, boy.
Dabble. Are you a dancer?
Well, only when I have to be. But, no, I'm a musician of sorts.
When someone is shooting a gun at your feet?
Yes, then I dance. Yes. Yeah. No. Very willingly. I play the oboe.
I do some
stuff in theater.
Did you bring your oboe with you by any chance?
It could be in the car because I sort of keep a lot of stuff in the car.
Yeah. Can you fit an oboe in the trunk? Probably not, huh?
I can fit an oboe under my left arm.
And drive at the same time?
And drive at the same time. But I haven't tried playing and driving at the same time.
Do you know about this quiz, Margaret? Are you familiar with it?
I've heard it a few times.
All right. So someone out there plays along with you.
Uh-huh.
And they have to answer a qualifying question, then it's cooperative. You can't hardly lose under these circumstances.
I'm aware of that.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to winning.
Well, a couple people have lost. If they annoy me, they lose. But it's rare when that happens. How can they get involved in this, Sarah?
Well, people at home who want to play the quiz, pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669 and answer this qualifying question.
Okay, if you're watching a sporting event with others on TV, what is the single most important factor in going there? For example, is it the nachos? Is it the other people? Is it who's playing? Is it who's there? Who else is going to be there? We want to know the single most important factor when you're going to the refreshments. Single most important factor when you're going to watch a game, big game, at somebody's place or wherever. Okay, here we go. Elizabeth's on the line from Fort Smith, Arkansas. Hey, Elizabeth. Oh, that book just fell. That's okay. That's all right.
Good morning.
Yeah. Hi. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Elizabeth, you're going to watch a sporting event on a TV somewhere, and what's the most important factor? Is it the size of the TV, the nachos, the refreshments, the other people there? What?
It's the food, of course.
The nachos?
Yes.
Yes, that's right. That's it. Number one, food and refreshment is the deciding factor. Congratulations, Elizabeth.
Yay.
Elizabeth, this is Margaret. She's your cohort here.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Margaret.
You guys want to chat for a while?
I'm glad you won. My sister's name is Elizabeth.
Okay.
Well, it was meant to be.
Yes.
Okay. The two of you work together. You're a team, okay, Elizabeth?
Okay.
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 We have various categories such as these.
Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, or odds and ends.
Well, Elizabeth, what'd you pick first? What would you like?
Things you should have learned in school.
All right, that works for me. There are 5 basic tastes, but how many basic smells? 6, 10, or dozens, if not scores? Basic smells, types
Margaret?
Of smells.
I
Should we go somewhere in the middle, perhaps?
What would that be, 10?
I think that's a great, great choice.
So you're saying 10?
I think we're going to go with 10.
10 basic smells? Elizabeth, okay with you?
10 sounds great.
Yes, 10 Woo-hoo! Basic smells.
Yay, Elizabeth.
Woody, sweet, bad, good, disturbing, can't place, Vaseline, gasoline, and mimeograph.
Did you say disturbing?
Disturbing smells.
Oh, it can't place. Yeah. That's one right and zero wrong.
Okay. Let's
the categories left are current events, people, places, science, or odds and ends.
Margaret?
Oh, let's go with the odds and ends. What do you think?
Odds and ends. Okay.
Odds and ends, it is.
What is the current thinking on testicle size and nurturing fathers?
Oh, I heard this.
It's been all over the place.
I heard this. I think the smaller, the better. The smaller, the...
Finally.
Gonads, the better the dad. I'm pretty sure I heard this recently on some random news.
All right. That's enough of that. Elizabeth, you go along with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
Yes, I think you qualified right on that one.
That's two right and zero wrong.
Okay, what's left there, Sarah?
Current events, people, places, or science.
All right, Elizabeth, back to you.
Science.
Yay. It is. All right, an unintended consequence for mice suffering with toxoplasmosis. Is it a revulsion for cheese? Absolutely no fear of cats, or they lose interest in scampering. Mice with toxoplasmosis. It's an infection.
I think it's the cheese. What do you say, Margaret?
One possibility.
That's one possibility. I think we should probably go somewhere else because that was just a possibility.
Why are you looking at me so intensely? I can't remember the last time a woman looked at me like that with intensity.
Mice like to scamper, and maybe toxoplasmosis might make them tired.
Okay. Then there's the fear of cats in that middle category.
Yeah. But, you know, mice usually are afraid of cats, but I think...
They are afraid of cats.
They get toxoplasmosis from cat litter, right? So maybe they're not afraid of cats anymore.
How'd that happen? But you're saying that could be...
I think it's the cat one.
So you're saying
I think you're right.
Fear of cats?
Yeah, fear of cats.
That's it. They have absolutely no
Yay!
Fear of cats. Simply from eating their litter. What an amazing thing nature is. Well, holy cow, they've won,
They
Sarah.
Have, in fact, won. That's right.
Should they quit here and go home?
Well,
or what?
That's up to them, but if they risk it all, they could, in fact, win the mother load.
Hey, let's go for the mother load.
Well, what is the mother load, though, Sarah?
The mother load is a whole whack of great prizes. A whole whack.
That's a lot, then, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, but you're saying there's one more question.
Just one more question.
And if they get it right, they win the whole whack.
Correct.
And if they get it wrong...
They win nothing.
They lose.
I think we should go for the whole whack. What do you think, Elizabeth?
What do you think, Elizabeth?
All or nothing, absolutely.
All or nothing Woo-hoo! At all. Another great song, by the way. All right, so this is the questionnaire will decide it, and let's just see what it is here.
Wait a minute, don't they have to choose a category?
Yes, choose a category, that's right. I don't do that. I guess, Margaret, it's your turn to choose.
The categories to choose from are current events, people, or places.
How about current events?
Okay.
I like current events.
Okay.
I hope it's about pirates.
Always a mistake, current events, but go ahead. One of the following is protected by the First Amendment. Is it the tweet or the retweet? Is it the Facebook like or is it the Facebook poke?
Oh.
Protected by the First Amendment. If you've been listening closely to Elizabeth, the monologue, which is unusual, frankly.
This answer was given away earlier in the show, Elizabeth. It's the Facebook. It's the Facebook
you know,
like.
I tell you the truth. I think you're right.
I think so too. I think everyone here thinks I'm right.
everyone thinks you're right. Is the feeling I get.
Yeah. So, what do you think, Elizabeth?
Facebook
and
like.
I agree with you.
That's right. Protected by the First
Yay!
Amendment. And what no quiz. Holy cow, they've won it all, the whole whack.
They will. Margaret, you'll wake up a fine fall appetite bicycling along the Capital City Bike Trail from Fitchburg on September 29th, refueling at several stations along the way and ending with a splendid brunch at Veranda Restaurant and Wine Bar from Madison Magazine's Festival of Foods. Then find out why you love some foods and hate others in Barb Stuckey's Taste, Surprising Stories and Science About Why Food Tastes Good, and a Tria paperback from Simon & Schuster. Grow your very own little garden of horrors using Peter D'Amato's Savage Garden. garden, cultivating carnivorous plants from 10 Speed Press, and embrace new culinary adventures with David George Gordon's Eat a Bug cookbook, with 40 ways to cook crickets, grasshoppers, ants, water bugs, spiders, centipedes, and their kin, also from 10 Speed Press. Elizabeth, make every day as much fun as being in the What Do You Know audience with a cup of Stephen Brew's breakfast blend, and sail through the afternoon with a rich and smooth Costa Rican terasu from Madison Stephen Brew Coffee, which is coffee done right. Then show your appreciation for the good life along the Mississippi Gulf Coast wearing a t-shirt from the Beau Rivage Resort and Casino Biloxi. Exercise your imagination with a Create Your Own Women's Room magnet set from Richfield Historical Society. Enjoy the sweet sound of Don Lang's Same River Twice on the CD from Rounder Records. And find out what percentage of people prefer sleep to sex in What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books.
Oh,
congratulations,
Steve.
Congratulations. I'll say hello to Sandy for you. Thank you for that. Okay, you got later. Elizabeth, hang out. Make sure you get all that stuff. Thanks for playing. Congratulations.
Attention Ole Miss Feldman fans. What Do You Know? We'll kick off the 10th season of the beautiful Ford Center in Oxford, Mississippi. Come be part of the celebration. Guests include Top Chef John Currents, best-selling author Ace Atkins, musician Shannon McNally, and much more. Tickets available by calling the box office at 662-915-7411 or online at notmuch.com. What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI, Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, Producer International. This is PRI, Public Radio International. Live from the Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, it's That Tree author, Mark Hirsch. Thanks for the memos and more of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now the man with a big shout-out to his brother Howard and the dechartered Phi Lambda Phi boys, it's Michael Feldman.
Hi, Lambda. Hi, Lambda Phi. Dechartered. Lost their charter. They don't exist. Right? You know, there is no Pi Lambda Phi anymore, right, Howard?
Yes, there is.
There is? Oh, not in the same form, though, right? They've been defanged.
It's a sorority.
It's a sorority. That's the way it was heading anyhow.
Oh, the whole family's funny.
Mostly women in that building, as I recall. Yeah, okay. All right, welcome, Howard. My brother Howard and his Pi Lamb brothers here for the big game, the Boilermakers. And really thank God for the Boilermakers. They're like the Cubs of the Big Ten. You know, each week at this time, an actual memo sent in by actual...
listeners.
I was going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I was just looking at you, and I forgot what I was going to say.
Aww.
I don't know what it is. And here's, well, this is actually not a memo here, so this is first, though. It's a little news article to come out of Springfield, Missouri, KSMU. Hi, guys, down there. Actually, Flippin. There's a town called Flippin near Springfield, Mo. And here's the news article. Flippin mayor shoots out window at City Hall. Authorities say no one was injured after the mayor of Flippin accidentally shot out a window in the police chief's office at City Hall. A police report obtained by the Baxter Bulletin says the rifle had been seized by Flippin police. Well, those Flippin police. I see. In the report, Police Chief Dusty Smith says he was on the telephone in his City Hall office when Mayor J.J. Hudson came in and picked up the gun. The chief says he heard a loud shot and saw a large hole in his window. No one was injured. Hudson told police he was trying to unload the firearm and that the ammunition had jammed. Right. He told the newspaper that it's all been taken care of and declined further comment. So thank you for that article. That's very interesting. All the flipping news that isn't. Here's the actual memo. It comes from somewhere in Arkansas. I can say that. And comment on junior sponsors. This about has having to do with the junior class, and it reads as follows. I received a phone call from a concerned parent about the junior class chants. They are concerned that the chant that received the most votes had the phrase, "Free Little Boozy" in it. Little Boozy is a rapper who is currently jailed and whose songs have explicit lyrics. The parent requested that we ensure that all class chants are appropriate and relevant to school spirit. I assured her that they most likely have to be, since they will be approved by the teachers and the principal, but thought I would mention it since the parent requested it. Thanks very much. Thank you for that memo on the Little Boozy chants of the junior class. Well, that was tepid. No tepid. Does it say tepid applause? It does not say tepid applause. Overreact. This is radio. Fake it. You're married, aren't you? You know how that works. Okay, thank you. Thank you for that wonderful reception. And where can they send memos or any sort of communications?
They can send memos or other letters to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org, subject line memos, or they can go to notmuch.com and post it there.
They can.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're writing something by snail mail, which you call snail mail.
Yeah, longhand snail mail.
Yeah.
821 University.
Longhand now, is it?
Longhand, yeah. 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin. 53706, care of What Do You Know? Thanks for the memos.
Have you actually ever written a letter? Or
many. I love letter writing. I think it's a lost art. Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh, good. And by the way, I'm on Twitter, too, if you want to get
yes,
in on that.
Yes, that's right. The handle is myfeldman, or at myfeldman. Yeah.
We still say the at, because
do
not
we?
Everyone is as hip as you are.
Okay.
And
at myfeldman.
Yeah.
And where are we going to be next Saturday morning?
Oh, it's very exciting.
Yeah.
Very
oh, my exciting. God. My heart is palpitating. I just should calm down.
No, it's great, though. Back in Oxford, I love it down there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oxford and Mississippi and Ole Miss.
Ole Miss.
They will. Everyone's going to be in Tuscaloosa, though, at the Alabama game.
That's kind of the downside of the whole thing.
Yeah, we should really do the show in Tuscaloosa because that's where they're going to be.
Population seem to have
my God.
We're looking for something kind of exciting to do down there. So yeah. For those of you listening down in Mississippi, if you have suggestions for fun things to do in Oxford.
You keep mentioning that. I don't have a problem.
I was thinking skydiving. I don't know. Like, what's fun to do?
You can do that. The place will be empty. You can do whatever you want. You can break into people's homes.
If people have suggestions, we are open to them.
Yeah.
Notmuch.com. Find our email address.
Yeah.
Send us suggestions.
Now, and I would like to point out that it's only 3 hours and 6 minutes to drive to Tuscaloosa. There's no direct route. I looked at all the various routes. 3 hours and 6 minutes is the estimated arrival. But if you speed, you probably do it like 2.5. So you could go to the show,
mm-hmm.
and you have you out of there by about noon, and you'll be there in plenty. The kickoff is 2:30 or something like that, right?
Perfect.
Isn't it?
I don't know what the kickoff time is.
Yeah, it's like 2:30 or something like that, and you'll have plenty of time. You can tailgate on the way down. By the way, tailgating at Ole Miss is unbelievable. They dress for it. It's like formal. It's so unlike here, you know, where nobody really dresses for tailgating here or really brings any food to it. But they have linen and they have silver and they have dressed, and it's just really kind of an amazing thing to see.
Too bad we'll miss that.
Yes, because it's not in town.
We could have we could host a tailgate before the show. 7 a.m. tailgate.
Yeah, we can try and do that. Yeah. But I'm not really dressed for it. I don't think I could do it.
Although you do look nice today, Michael. You look sharp.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I got a lot of inadvertent applause.
You should have seen the last
one. You're the only one who thinks so. You're the only one who likes me, John. Oh. You're always saying nice things to me. Yeah. And I wish you'd stop it. It makes me uncomfortable. Well, what about this book, though? On That Tree. Everybody has a tree around them, but no one thinks to make a book about it. But Mark Hirsch, are you Mark Hirsch? No? Oh, there's Mark Hirsch. I thought maybe the guy with the camera was you. And you sort of look alike, don't you? It's kind of. Hi, Mark. How are you? Have a seat there. Got the book? Great book. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Wonderful idea. It's called That Tree, an iPhone photo journal documenting a year in the life of a lonely bur oak. And this is the one here. I can't see that at home, I guess. It's on our Facebook page, by the way. Several shots of the tree. And there's more on your website if you want to look at the website while we're doing this.
Yep, absolutely.
Get an idea. What's your website?
It's thattree.net.
Thattree.net. So check it out here. Bur oak is not maybe the most highly esteemed of trees, is it?
I don't know.
It gets a bad rap, don't you
think?
I
always call it the sentinel of the prairie, so in my book it's pretty esteemed.
Yeah, but it's also the swamp oak, Jerry Rudman tells me. You know we have a beautiful one here on campus.
I've heard that.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
No, I have not.
Jerry, it's down by, if you go down Van Vleck, you're going over the hill and down the hill.
Just a beautiful
Van Vleck. Van Vleck down the hill, and it's on your right then?
It's going towards the waterfall, it's on the right.
Towards the what?
I'm lost.
Okay. That's where it is. You can't miss it. It's a very huge tree. And it's beautifully configured, Jerry tells me. He used to take many dates there to the burrow, and they would make wishes on all the leaves or something like that. Tell us about bur oaks, first of all, tree. What kind of tree is it?
They were the predominant tree in the native prairie of the Midwest, and unfortunately, as a result of our agricultural practices, there aren't many of them left, at least not in a situation like this one.
Yeah.
You know, they've been bulldozed, they've been taken out to establish crop grounds, so yeah. Coincidentally, this one survived and attracted my attention.
Yeah, so what, they just plowed around it? Because
literally.
Farm field.
And right now, I mean, in days past, I don't know how the farmers farm next to it, because with implements today, they're big enough that they don't have to get underneath the tree. The implements reach under. And the guy that farms it now still farms right up to within about 10 feet of the base of the tree, so it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Do we know how old this tree is?
A geologist from UW-Platteville came out and did a core sample, and it was 163 years old based on the core sample, but it is hollow, so he figures maybe 185 years old. So it's been here a long time. Seen a lot
it
of
makes
Wisconsin's
a difference
history.
If you're hollow or not as far as your age?
Well, I mean, because it's hollow, he couldn't get an actual complete core sample because the center of the tree is missing.
Now, should we worry because it
no,
is hollow?
No, no. Well,
just to be worried
I wondered the same thing, and he said, you know, Mark, he said it's still a very healthy tree.
Yeah.
So...
Wow, okay. I don't want to worry about something else. I got enough on my plate here. I'm going to worry about this tree standing in a field outside of Platteville. Where is it exactly?
It's south of Platteville, at the intersection of County Highway D and Airport Road.
Okay, and this is not, you have a farm out there.
I have a farm on Airport Road, but it's not on my property.
So this is like the neighbor's.
Yep, friend of mine.
You kept driving past it?
Yeah, I drove by it for 20 years, and in January of 2012, I got an iPhone, and I posted a note on my Facebook page. And a friend who's a photographer in the Twin Cities, Corey Pepplin, Jack's her name, she sent me a note, isn't the camera great? I'm a professional photographer. I didn't buy it for a camera. I bought it for a phone. But she was like, seriously, treat it like a camera. So I'm driving home on January 20th, 2012. I'm sorry. I know. It's like, wow, really?
Sad, but it's
and
true.
I stopped and took a picture of the tree. And, you know, it actually proved to be a pretty capable camera.
Yeah. And the tree. I thought you'd say something about the tree.
Well, and the tree
cares
was
about the iPhone.
Well, no. Well, and it was a coincidence. I mean, I've
say
driven by
something
this tree.
About the tree.
Well, I've driven by it. I've admired it. I never once took a picture of it, but as a result of her inspiration, I took a picture of the tree. It just happened to be the thing that got my attention that day. So it could have been anything.
A
pretty girl,
a radio tower.
No, no, probably a pretty girl or something would have gotten my attention more than a cell tower.
Would you drive past her every day for a year and take a picture of her? She was,
no,
was that attractive?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's some, there's something about the trees.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it kind of resonated with me. And, you know, even then, after the initial picture, I didn't photograph it every day until the mid-March of the same year. I took another picture of it on March 13th. And a friend of mine sent me a note. He didn't see it on my Facebook page till March 23rd, and he sent me a note. He's like, "Dude, what's with you and that tree? Why don't you do a why don't you take a picture a day of it?" And obviously, if he told me to jump off a bridge, I'd probably jump off a bridge too. Because the
this
next
guy
day,
has too much power over you.
Well, the next day, I started. I started the project. And
what is this grip that he has on you?
I don't know.
What is the root of it, so to speak? Okay. So you took a picture every day starting that day in March.
Oh. March 24th of 2012 till March 23rd of 2013. I know, it seems a little off.
No, so through every kind of weather, and the pictures, yeah. They're actually gorgeous pictures. I wish we could show them here, but like
Thank
I say,
you.
Go on there. I like the one especially with the dog with the tree.
Oh, yeah, my pal Magnum.
Yeah, very nice. That's your pal, that's your dog.
Yep.
There's the tree in the background, but it's like in every sort of situation that a tree could be in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 365 days, and
yeah.
I'm still at
Is this
it
your
for
family?
Some crazy
Is
reason.
Your family?
No, actually, it's a friend of mine from Colorado.
Wandering family finds the tree here in the field. Another Kodak moment for this tree. This tree has had some amazing moments. Did you happen to talk with the farmer or someone who's known this tree growing
yeah,
up?
Yeah, actually, I did do some research, and the land that that tree is on, the soil was never broken until 1989. So I guess that explains
really?
Why it's still there. It was that particular tract was all pasture.
No kidding.
So
a lot of cows growing
yep,
up.
Yep, absolutely. And then it was tilled for the first time in 1989. And for
That's
some
amazing,
reason, the farmer that owned it at the time liked the tree and tilled around it. And then the guy that owns it now is a good friend of mine, and same attitude, same philosophy. I have a good story about that. In within a month of me starting my project, I thought my friend was leasing the ground, and I said to him, you know, it's amazing that that tree is still there because it's hardly convenient for a farmer to work around it. And he says, well, you know, he said in the spring I had an excavator out doing waterway control and removing fence lines, which many farmers did this year because of commodity prices being so high. And so he went out on a Saturday to inspect the work, and the bulldozer operator says to him, while I'm at it, you want me to push over that tree too? And I know, pretty scary for me. And my friend's comment was, you know, that tree's been here for over 200 years. I'm not the guy that's going to knock it over.
Oh.
So fortunately, it's still there today.
Yeah. Holy cow. I didn't get that whole part about removing your fences when the commodity prices are high, but I'm sure that a lot of people out there saying, yeah, that's right.
Well, they want more ground for crops.
Oh,
more
okay,
ground
of
for
course.
Crops.
What am I thinking? I don't think like a farmer. What's the matter with me? And you do have this Aldo Leopold quote of it, which I really like. Why don't you read it?
Sure. Thus, he who owns a veteran burr oak owns more than a tree. He owns a historical library and a reserve seat in the theater of evolution. To the discerning eye, his farm is labeled with the badge and symbol of the Prairie War.
Interesting. Now, do we know what the Prairie War
I'm sorry, is? I do not. No, I'm guessing the
species.
Prairie War would have been the Europeans settling this area and turning over the prairie to plant domestic crops.
Yeah. Was the burr oak there to meet?
You know, actually, no, it would not have been. And actually, this wouldn't even be considered a witness oak. It wouldn't have been
No,
here
not
when,
this one, but I mean the species
oh,
in general.
Yes, absolutely.
Perhaps
absolutely.
The first tree one would see?
More than likely in the Midwest on the prairie,
on
absolutely.
The prairies.
Yep.
And why are they attracted to prairies?
I'm not an arborist, but I will say that they were the burr oak was impervious to prairie fires, whereas softwood trees and other less hardy trees would die and as a result of the fires, and the burr oaks could endure it and survive. So
why impervious?
I don't know.
Couldn't you burn that sucker if you really tried?
I think if you really tried, you could. But a prairie fire would burn the grasses around the tree, and it really wouldn't dwell, and so, no, they survived.
Isn't that interesting? Why is there only one?
I didn't know
one,
this was
though?
A science
what?
Quiz.
No, I'm really interested. No, I don't know. Why don't you see, like, a flock of them or a stand
well,
of
because,
burr
because
oaks?
They, well, yeah, good question, because... Yes. Burr oaks compete with one another, and the nearest burr oak will not be any closer than the shade of the next tree. And there's as much structure to a burr oak under the ground in its root system as there is the canopy above ground.
Okay. And just some figures on this particular tree. Can you tell us height? And
It's probably about 55, 60 feet tall. Yeah. I don't know quite what the circumference is. Two people reaching around could hug it nicely.
Okay. I'm sure you've done that.
I
don't want to hear the details on that.
Yes, I have. But,
and the crown, do we have, you know, how big the crown goes?
You know, honestly, I don't know. I think it's
pretty
probably comparable to its height, so probably 60 feet.
Yeah, it looks like it might be more, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, possibly.
Well, if you turn it, hard to imagine actually turning it sideways for a moment to get that sensation. It would be hard to do. Are there any other bur oaks in the area?
There are not. Yeah. I mean, it's all alone in the midst of corn and soybeans.
Yeah. Were the bur oaks actually harvested and for lumber purposes?
You know, I don't think the wood of a bur oak is all that convenient for, you know, construction. It's really knotty.
It's not convenient? It's knotty.
It's knotty, yeah. I mean, it's strong. It's an oak, but...
Coffee tables?
Yeah, possibly coffee tables. Yeah, sure. Crafty wood. Yeah. I don't think we'd build our houses with it, though.
So there aren't any places out there that construct entirely of bur oak?
I don't know.
Never hear that.
Nope.
It doesn't get the same respect as some of the other oaks.
No, I don't think so.
The white oak, your red oak.
The red oak, no.
Your black oak,
no.
Your other oaks. I'm not sure how many kind of oaks there are. But.
So this was my opportunity to elevate the bur oak to some level of fame.
Yeah. Has this inspired in you a desire to learn more about...
It did, as a matter of fact.
It changed your life.
Yeah, well, it has. I mean, you know, historically, I knew nothing about that particular tract of ground, and as a result of this project, you know, involved a geologist to come out and do the core sample. It was really interesting to learn the age of the tree. I also learned who the first owner of that property was, which was really interesting. John Hawkins Roundtree, who was pretty famous in Midwest history, ended up being a politician. And the surveyor who surveyed that property, Wisconsin's Historical Society, has an incredible resource that you can go on, and if you know the quadrant of the property, you can find the notes from the surveyor. Mm. And the surveyor that surveyed this property, his name was Lucius Lyons, and just it's really interesting to imagine him out there, you know, with a horse and a wagon and a sextant, whatever they were using back then for surveying, and looking upon that land, and he probably looked upon a bur oak that was the parent tree to this one.
How do they reproduce? Is it acorns come from?
I think actually, yes, they do, and I think they're asexual. I think that they produce both the male and the female part of the process. Pretty interesting. Envision that, Michael.
I'm trying to. It'd be a little slow, I think, but if you had the time for it, it'd be somewhat interesting. But I mean, and that's all well and good and stuff, but I mean, spiritually, has this changed you? I'm looking for
the
spiritual growth.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, when I started this project, I looked at it just as a tree in a cornfield, you know.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, it's kind of crazy. I mean, I've spent a lot of time with this tree. I mean, a lot of time with this tree. I've talked to this tree. Doesn't talk back. Very good listener.
No.
But you know,
do you feel a rapport? I mean, you know.
A silent rapport, maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, I looked at it as just a tree in a cornfield. And now, you know, it's so much more. Every day I'm down there, and you start to recognize that were it not for this tree, it's a monoculture of soy or of corn or soybeans. The deer, the turkey, the blackbird, whatever it may be, if it weren't for that tree, there's no source or justification or reason for them to be there. And, you know, I kind of look at it now as like the tree of life for that realm in that cornfield.
Hmm. Well, that's very beautiful. Well, didn't you think? That's worthy of a little appreciation. Come on, people. Have you heard from other bur oaks or people who are as fascinated with the species?
I have not, but I'll tell you. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. I had no idea what affinity people had for trees until I embarked on this project. And when I started it, you know, some media organizations gave it some attention, had a reasonable number of followers on Facebook. But today there are 32,000 people following this project on Facebook, and it's...
I'm in the wrong business.
Yeah.
Should have gone into bur oaks.
But the way people reflect on it and their relationship to my project and their appreciation for it, I mean, I suddenly realized that trees really resonate with people for some strange reason.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's metaphorical to us or otherwise, but, you know, it's been a really cool experience.
Yeah. Well, it's a wonderful... And if photographs are wonderful.
Thank you.
So this is a must read if you're interested in this sort of thing. Not everyone is, but it's called That Tree, an iPhone photo journal documenting a year in the life of a lonely bur oak, Mark Hirsch. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mike. Thank
you. You want the book back? I got my copy. And I want you to know that no trees were murdered in the production of this book. This is all reused stuff, Kleenex and such. So no trees went into this book. Very nice. Hirsch, by the way, H-I-R-S-C-H. If you're looking them. If you're going to Google them, that's how you do it. Okay.
Boy, that tree was there when, tree was already old when I was growing up down there.
Oh, yeah, it was way old when you were growing there. Huh. It was there when your dad was growing up.
He didn't grow up there.
When your granddad.
He didn't grow up there.
Well, when he's growing up somewhere. You just don't spoil the moment. You got to ruin every moment, don't you?
I try to.
It's good. It's good that you do that. Brings me back down to earth.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a tree that you were fond of? As a boy, did you have a tree in your yard? You used to climb it?
I don't know. I don't remember any specific tree. I like trees in general.
General trees?
I don't have anything against them.
No particular trees. Jeff, any trees? Yes, Jeff has a tree. What was it?
We had a lot. We had pine trees in the front.
Pine trees.
Oh, my God. Pine trees?
But, I mean, was there one particular tree that you used to climb, maybe? And yes?
Yes. You know, we had a very big, it's kind of a pine tree.
Pine tree.
Pine tree. You can't really
conifer of some sort, spruce, a spruce maybe.
We would put haunted houses in.
Haunted houses.
We would make stuff.
Okay, that's enough. Thank you very much. Very sweet. Possible book in that. Anyhow, a little song here.
Yeah, this is a Cole Porter tune called "I Concentrate on You."
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Michael Feldman.
All right, let's get through as many of these as possible. Have you ever considered moving the show to Kalamazoo, Michigan? No. Who in the audience was a checker with Mark Hirsch at Dick's Supermarket in Platteville? You were, all right. Another book in that. How about Dick's Supermarket? Pictures every day of the year for a full year. Of Dick's Supermarket in Platteville. There are more than one Dick's. Oh, are they? Okay. That didn't sound right. I apologize for that. Bonnie Griffin, do you find me attractive? Bonnie, where are you?
I didn't write that.
You didn't write that? But I do, even though you didn't write it. I do. I find you very attractive, Bonnie. And I don't even want to think about it now because then I can't go out with all this other stuff I got to do, but... Okay, whoever wrote that, you nailed me on that one. Did you ever get into a playground fight in grade school? Yes, Billy Shy. I forget what he did, but it was pretty bad. And I got to admit, I jumped him. Yeah, well, I wrestled him to the ground, and I don't know. And then by the next year, he grew about 2 feet and was big. And so, and I really was apologetic and nice. And that was the only fight I'd ever been in, really. And I don't know what he said to me or something, but Billy Shy. What was your favorite book as a child? How did it influence your life? Danny Dunn, Anti-Gravity Paint. Judy, since you asked, Judy Afton, where are you? Judy, hi. Do you think I'm attractive, Judy?
I just want to say that I was in Flippin, Arkansas last January.
We're in Flippin. Can you imagine that could happen in Flippin?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, kind of thing. Okay, thank you very much. She wasn't Flippin. Who's tougher in real life, Clint Eastwood or Liam Neeson? Liam Neeson is a nothing. Clint Eastwood could trash him with a look. It's ridiculous. Who is making worse decisions right now, Miley Cyrus or Justin Bieber? They should date, is what I think. They could settle it that way. Pretty soon she'll be moving his stuff out of her house. So, okay. Where is Avery?
Right here.
Yeah. Are you following all this kind of stuff, Avery?
Yeah, I am.
You are? Okay. Well, let's get the details now because I don't want to glance over everything because this is obviously pretty... Are you like a Justin Bieber fan?
No. Oh, gosh, no.
definitely.
What do you hate most about him?
He throws a lot of temper tantrums, and he's a little girl, so, you know, just...
He's a little girl, is that what you said?
Yes, he is.
Okay, and Miley Cyrus?
Well, she's weird, and she dances naked on a wrecking ball in her music video, yeah. So that's not...
Is that good or bad?
That's very bad. That's very bad. She's...
Which part of it, the wrecking ball or the...
The fact she's naked on a wrecking ball and trying to sing.
In what sense did that make, I mean, from a point of any sort of point of view? Was there meaning to that?
I don't know. She was just kind of singing, and then she kind of took off her clothes and got on a wrecking ball, and it was very confusing.
Especially for a young person like yourself to see that.
I was just watching, and all of a sudden she's naked on a wrecking ball. Yeah. And it wasn't pleasing to watch. It was...
And all our fans from Nickelodeon are watching us, and they're saying, my God, what is life really about?
What happened to her? I know.
Yeah.
She was such a little star, good role model, and now she's not.
Did you like her one time?
Yeah, when she was Hannah Montana.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Can you imagine Hannah Montana doing it? No, you can't.
No, I can't see Hannah Montana doing this.
Yeah. It violates so much in a young child's consciousness. A young child has one, I don't know, I think.
Yeah, it's weird. It's not good to see.
Thank you very much, Avery. We're going to check in with you periodically.
All right. Thank you.
Pop culture.
Thank you.
Avery Rank from Sun Prairie, our pop culture consultant. Is iOS 7 the sequel to the Return of the Secaucus 7? That's pretty good. Okay. When it happens, does it do it like that? Yes, Jay. Exactly like that. No variation whatsoever. I can't remember. It's been so long since it's happened, but I think it would do it like that. Do you recommend attending the University of Wisconsin for grad school, Nathan Johnson? Where are you, Nathan Johnson? Okay, let's find out what you're in and see if we got it here. We got most stuff here that you'd probably want to have. I don't know. You're in Wyoming now, right? In Sheridan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Want to get your stand up here? Unless you're really tall. No, that's fine. How are you?
I'm good.
Are you visiting or?
Yep.
Who are you visiting?
My aunt and uncle.
Hey, how you doing, you guys? They live here in Madison, then?
Yes, they do. Yeah.
And how did that happen? You have an uncle here, and you're way in Wyoming.
People moving away. I don't know.
It's with people. They're always moving. They can't be content with it. Does your family come from Wisconsin, though?
No, they don't. No. Marshall.
Did you guys come from Wyoming?
No, Montana. We all came from Montana.
Oh, from okay, so there's diaspora from Montana.
Yeah, kind of spread, you know.
Okay, cool. And you're in what? Engineering, it says here.
Yes.
That's what you're looking for in graduate school?
Yes, it is.
Okay, we got anyone here? Engineering, UW? Yes, well, here. Okay, fix you right up here. Maybe get you in, as a matter of fact. We got someone from Edgewood, too. They might have engineering at Edgewood, do they? No? Okay, got to get it. Can I get you stand up? You are?
Alex Rank.
Hey, the Ranks. The Ranks, Father. Tell us about engineering possibilities here at the University of Wisconsin.
Went to agricultural engineering, and then my sister-in-law at the time, or my sister's fiancé, thought it was egg engineering.
All right. It's like,
Oh, that's great school, but it was a long time ago.
Okay. So. That's all you got to say on behalf of, the UW engineering.
It's great school. That's all I got.
There's a whole big ag campus, too, isn't there? Engineering and engineering's a lot of buildings now.
Oh, yeah. It's everything's changed since I've been to school there. So it's all the buildings are gone and new ones are up. And
well, there you go. How's that for recommendation? That's got to bring you here. Thank you very much. Boy, they tell you, these ranks are handy to have around. You know, any subject, you turn to a rank. It is rank, isn't it? Not rank. Yes. Catherine Osborne, who was the midwife for my second baby's birth, who was actually born in a parking lot of the hospital, so we couldn't get the midwife there. It really didn't work out very well. We had this whole thing. We were going to burn candles and essential oils and that sort of thing. Where is she, Catherine Osborne? Oh, that's you. That's you from there, from Montana. How are you? What a small world this turns out to be. So his aunt and uncle, his aunt, it was supposed to be the midwife, but that didn't quite, did you get the call? It happened pretty quick.
I sent you home from the hospital because it wasn't quite time yet, and then a couple hours later got a phone call. Michael Feldman and his wife are on their way back in, and she's having the baby in the car.
Yeah.
So I quickly came and got there just shortly after you did.
She popped out in the ER, so.
She's in a bigger
There are very few midwives in the ER, I've noticed.
I was there.
Yeah.
Right. She was in a hurry to get here.
But thank you anyhow for the effort.
You're welcome. It was my pleasure.
And then we didn't have to take the room, so it was actually a big money. We had this whole room. We had the birthing suite and with, you know.
You had to pass up all that. So.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It turned out very well. She's here. She's a sophomore here now. So.
Oh, that makes me feel old. I thought she was still a toddler.
Yeah, she is. She's a very precocious toddler. She's a sophomore in college.
All right. Yep, you're welcome.
Nice to see you again. All right. How are we doing time-wise?
We got some time.
I like to, you know, everybody writes a card and sends some good ones this week. Carol Falk, who's a sheep farmer, what is the value of alpacas? Shouldn't you know that, Carol? I'm just thinking that if you were a sheep farmer and thinking maybe going into alpaca, that you would know the value. You mean the value, like the spiritual value or the, there's no way I can get there from here, but I'll go around this way. Because maybe, are you thinking of branching out? Into alpaca, can I get you to come down here? Because I'm tired of walking. Right? I'm Bush from false here and a dead end there. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Do you have, how many? Is it improper to ask how many sheep you have? Because cattle farmers get really annoyed. Ranchers get annoyed with that.
Oh, no. Give or take one or two on a given day, around 40.
Well, that's good. You say that to a rancher, you said, well, because you multiply each one by $5,000, then you know how much he's worth, you know. So, what do you multiply sheep by?
Food.
Okay. Are you thinking of alpacas?
Yes. I'd like to think about getting into alpacas. I did it one time, but they were so expensive.
Oh.
Yeah.
And so then you actually know the value of an alpaca.
No, that's why I'm asking you.
Why would you ask a radio host who knows nothing really about anything about advice about investing all kinds of into alpacas?
Because you're supposed to know everything, aren't you?
If it's not on a card, I don't know it.
Well, your guess is probably as good as mine.
Okay, I don't know. Anyone in alpacas here? I mean, not wearing alpaca. I mean, are you wearing alpaca? Do you know alpacas?
I bought an alpaca.
Oh, okay. Here. Are you kidding? Do you know her?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, excuse me. I'll ask her the question you should have asked her when she bought that damn alpaca. Somebody should have asked her or stopped her. Can I get you just to stand up here for just a second? How did you happen to buy an alpaca last week?
Well, I was with Carol, and we went into a store in Door County, and the next day we bought two alpaca, because you don't buy one.
Was this on a whim or something? Or this is kind of what?
Pretty much. Now we've
heard of whim buying an alpaca.
That's what we're thinking.
Women buying one, but a whim, that's...
That's what we're thinking, and we think we have alpacas for the next 20 years, because you don't. They live a long time.
I mean, do you have a place to put them or something? I mean, do you...
Well, with Carol...
In a condo or what do you...
We have a barn. We have lots of places for the... And we'll give them a good life.
Right.
But we don't know anything about taking care of them.
And why is she teasing me about this whole alpaca business?
She's embarrassed that she bought one.
Oh, okay.
Both a little embarrassed.
Okay, all right. And your name is?
Nancy.
Nancy, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for clearing this up. I'm a little shocked at your behavior. Because I'm a sincere person. Good luck with that alpaca.
Thank you. We're going to need it, I think.
Better figure out what to do with them, though, real quick, because they're not sheep. Let's put it that way. How can I get my husband to change the paint color I really want for our bedroom? Okay, this is tough. I don't think I want to get involved in this. Where is Chris, a food scientist from St. Paul? Maybe we can clear it. Is he here? Is the husband actually here? Okay, we can sort of force him to do it, I guess. Popular opinion, you know how that works. We get enough people to say he should have. You know, men don't really know colors. That's one. Have you ever argue about blue, green, or?
No, he does know color.
He does.
But I've mentioned purple, and nothing's happened.
A purple bedroom probably wouldn't do you a lot of good.
He says there are colors that I come down into the basement. That there are colors that I should come down and see, and I could select one of those.
You have colors in your basement?
Yeah, I do. Well, I have kind of a color viewing area with, like, light.
How do you happen to have a color viewing?
Well, I'm a designer, so I have some special light bulbs set up in a nice color-corrected area. And I have...
Set those up in the bedroom, see what happens.
You know, I tried... I have the drapes that will be in the bedroom, and I brought them down to the basement. so that then I could match the colors in a nice environment. And but she's
you got a big problem here. You know, you're not going to convince him of anything. He's got a color viewing area in the basement.
I know.
Did you even know that?
I know, and there's the drapes for the bedroom down there.
Did you even know that he had that down?
Kind of. I don't go into that part.
No, you wouldn't. It's a little alarming, even apart from this whole question of paint. He's down there viewing colors in the basement. Do you wonder where your drapes and tablecloths have been disappearing to?
Yes, definitely.
Probably your wardrobe is down there, a lot of it.
Well, it is because he does the laundry down there.
I can't help you. I'm sorry. This is a severe problem.
Right, thank you.
Where is another radio show entirely?
Okay, yeah. Thanks.
Good luck with that. Sorry. Oh, boy, that's a tough one. All right, let's see. Anyone else? Really quick here. We got to go into the quiz again. Why did the National Pork Board choose the slogan, Be Inspired? I didn't know they had. It's no longer the other white meat. I can see the other white meat. But Be Inspired is a stretch. I think we're talking about pigs, basically, or hogs. Where is a Peter Stapp student in St. Paul? Oh, hi, come on. Come on, clear this up. Are you with these people who can't decide on a color?
I am, sadly.
Yeah. Your parents, or?
Oh, yeah.
You want to get involved in this color argument?
Not at all.
Okay, good. Is that their slogan?
Yeah, they just changed it. And I think it's awful, because, like, what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, with pork or hogs or...
Yeah, I think the other white meat is good, but Be Inspired, I don't get it. Okay. I can see that for, like, the color situation, because you want to be inspired.
Well, thanks for raising the question. We'll see, maybe people...
I thought it was an important question, so why not?
It is. What do you think they were thinking? I mean, by what stretch be inspired in hogs?
I don't know. Be inspired to, I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah, eat something. That's the only thing I can think of. I've never been inspired by a slab of meat. So.
Okay, well, you're still young. Okay. Thank you, Peter Stapp. Okay, that's all the time we have for all your questions. But keep them coming because I do enjoy them. Even though if you don't always know what we can do to help. We're going to play another round of the What Do You Know quiz because you didn't get a chance. I'm sorry, what?
I was wondering if I could play the quiz.
Oh, come on, why not? Come on, it saves me a lot of trouble. Really, I got to go through these things otherwise and make a fool of myself. Let's just see if you qualify. You are?
Missy.
Missy. And are you from here, Missy?
I'm originally from West Bend, but I live in Madison now.
And how do you like it?
It's very nice. I've been here for about 2 years.
Okay. Missy, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
Well, I can't think of a good reason that I shouldn't.
All right, then, Missy. Well, come on, Missy. Is Missy your actual legitimate name?
Melissa.
Oh, Melissa. Okay, that's good, too. I'd go this way, yeah. Job for the chords. OSHA. Look at all these chords we got. Have a seat there if you would. You cannot not like someone named Missy.
Thank you. My parents feel that way as well.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. Do you have a big family, other sisters and brothers?
One older brother. He lives in Chicago.
Is he? What's his name?
Russell.
Not as good as Missy.
Not as good as Missy, no.
Okay. And so what do you do these days? Are you in school? Are you working?
I work for a software company. I'm in project management.
Oh. Can we say which company it is, or is that on
the
hush?
Know. Yeah, I don't know.
Say it once. Let's see. Huh? Epic. Everybody works for Epic. Thank you. I'd be surprised if it wasn't Epic. Epic is huge. What do you do for them exactly?
I do project management on their radiology and cardiology software.
That's what I figured. Something like that. Well, that's cool. That's great. You like the job?
I do. Very much. Very much. It's very challenging.
Yeah. Now, how does one get to be that? Did you have, are there courses for that in school? Or?
No. I studied Spanish and economics, so it's not
there
particularly
There you go.
Take
Spanish
related.
And economics. You could do this project
right.
management
mm-hmm.
at Epic.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a cool thing. Well, wasn't that interesting? Did you have to learn a lot of new stuff?
Yeah, very intensive training prior to working with customers or being involved in the field, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. How much vacation time do you get?
That's a good question.
Yeah. You haven't had one yet, huh?
No, I have. Yeah, just little ones. Little ones. Nothing too extensive.
Yeah. That's cool. That's very cool. And then what do you like to do for, are you married or?
No.
Sort of thing?
No, not married, no.
Serious? Serious?
I have a dog who I'm very serious about.
Serious with your dog? Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Any trees in your life?
No trees, no.
Okay, that's good. Keep your options open, I say.
Right, yeah.
Just tell my daughters.
Trying not to tie myself down to trees.
Yeah, enjoy when you don't have anybody. That's the best part of your life. Eventually you'll get somebody, then you'll see it's not, but it's cracked up. Anyhow, that's neither here nor there. Okay, someone out there plays along with you. It's a general knowledge quiz, which means that it's ridiculous, really. And we have various categories, don't we, Sarah Nix?
Well, but first somebody needs to call in and play with her.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I've got ahead of myself here. That's right. We picked other contestant.
That's
here.
Right.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
How do we do that then?
Well, people at home who want to play, pick up the phone and dial.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Look, there's people already on
the
line.
I won't say the number out loud.
Okay.
And then you ask them a qualified
question.
Say it,
because I like it when you say that.
1-800-942-5669.
Not that, the other way.
1-800-HWA-NO or 1-800-WHACK-NOW.
Thank you. The single biggest public restroom complaint. There are many complaints about public restrooms. You probably made a few yourself. But the number one complaint made about public restrooms. Okay. No, don't talk about it among yourselves. Let's see what that is. Let's go to Karen. She's in Berea. Is that right, Berea?
Yes, Berea.
That's near Cleveland, isn't it?
About 15 minutes away, yeah.
15 minutes from Cleveland. And how are you, Karen, this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Are you getting ready for a big weekend or cooking or making something or going somewhere?
My son's playing football.
Well.
Duck appointments, stuff like that.
A duck appointment, did you say?
Right.
You have an appointment with a duck?
Doctor's appointment.
Oh, a doctor. I thought I said a duck appointment. It's me. It's not you. It's me. What's the single biggest complaint about public restrooms, Karen?
That there's no more toilet paper.
Yes, that's it exactly. There's no toilet paper. Okay. I don't know. They're all pretty close. It said smell on there, the smell. But, you know, I sort of take that for granted when I go into a public restroom. It's not gonna, you're not going walking into a fleur-de-lis.
That's right.
Are you? You're walking into a public restroom. That's French, you know.
Fleur-de-lis.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thank you. Hi, Karen. You win. So you're on the quiz now. You feel pretty good about that?
I feel awesome about that.
You got time before your appointment and everything?
I'm just waiting.
Okay.
For my son to come out, so.
Oh, your son, you're at the appointment right now?
Yeah, I was just waiting for him to come out, so I'd call in.
Just a regular checkup?
Counselor.
Okay, all right, no more. Say no more. That's good. So you're in the reception room right now?
I'm in my car.
Oh, you're in your car. Wait, okay, that's cool. Karen, this is Missy.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Missy.
She's a project manager here at Epic, the big software company here in town. And the two of you are a team right now. Okay?
All right.
All right, so let's work together, and let's tackle this, baby. Now.
Now the
Sarah
categories.
Nix, what are those categories?
Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Okay. Karen, you pick first one. What would you like?
How about science?
So then you have one son playing football as well?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Let's see.
He plays flag football.
Oh, flag football. Okay, that's good. Are your plants better off if you rub them, talk to them, or ignore them? This has been studied.
Karen, do you have any thoughts on this?
I just ignore mine, so.
How are they doing? Pretty good?
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't looked at them.
Yeah, you have no idea. They could be dead, for all you know, right? And you're just ignoring them.
I think they do better if you talk to them. I think
talk
there's studies, aren't there, with science?
I've heard that, yeah.
What about actually making physical contact with them, sort of stimulating what might be there for an immune response that would actually
make them... To rub them, you mean?
Yes, to rub them. Touch them, fondle them. Depends,
work
a lot on the vegetation we're talking about here.
I would think that could work too.
Okay, I'm turning
sure,
over
yeah,
to you.
Sure, yeah, let's go with that. Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying you should. Sure. I'm saying, have you ever thought of that?
That would be a good idea.
What
yes?
do you say, Karen?
You're yeah. saying rub them?
Sure.
I say yes, rub them.
Yes, rub them. It brings on mechanical stress that bolsters their immune system. How do you like that? Okay.
That's one right and zero wrong.
Okay, good.
And the categories remaining are current events, people, places.
Should someone else call in now for the next?
No. Okay. Karen sticks with us. Okay. Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school, or odds and ends.
Okay. Missy?
Let's do people.
People. What do you? What's okay. What's your hobby? You have a hobby?
My hobby? I cook. I travel a lot, so it's difficult to have like that hobby.
For Epic, you cook.
Yeah.
You travel
mm-hmm.
on. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
What do you like to cook, for example?
Mostly Latin food, so like tacos, Mexican food. I lived in Costa Rica and Nicaragua for a little while.
Oh, you did? So. Really? Yeah. What sort of spicing goes in them? What would you use for?
A lot of cayenne pepper.
A lot of cayenne.
Kind of whatever's around. Yeah. Turmeric.
Okay.
Whatever.
Yeah. What would you want for a category?
People.
Okay. Interesting, this cooking thing. Percentage of pet owners who have fed their pets cranberries. This is from the cranberry people, and they want to increase this, I presume. It's supposed to be good for them, I guess. You know, grapes, you can't give grapes to my puggle. So every time a grape hits the floor, I got to dive for it before Tina gets there.
Right.
It's close, I'll tell you. Of course, she's a lot closer to the grape than I am. You know, I got to go a longer distance. Okay. Percentage of pet owners who have fed their pets cranberries, 3, 2, or 1%? Going to antioxidants, those cranberries. If pets need antioxidants, maybe they don't.
Of course.
I guess maybe.
I do. Yeah. Do you feed your pets cranberry?
No.
Like anything, any fruit at all?
Apples.
Apples. Yeah. Tina likes apples. Watermelon, anything. Really.
Would it be 2%?
It would be 2, 3, or 1%. Yeah.
Well, cranberries wouldn't be my first choice, so I would I would say probably 1%.
A surprising finding from the cranberry people. Well, they're alarmed by it. They think it should be 100%, you know. You know cranberry people, those guys standing in the bogs all day. You got to move those babies.
Sure, yeah, we can go with 1%.
Not just for Thanksgiving anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Also for Fido, yeah.
So you're saying 3%? Do you think it's that high?
I think it's 3%.
It seems alarmingly high, doesn't it, Karen? 3%?
Oh, you think that sounds high?
No, it is higher than 2 or 1, but... 3?
Then let's
Yes,
then
3
let's
is right. 3%, okay. I'm not trying to fool you here. I have nothing to gain from it. I don't know why I do the rest of it. It's just me.
That's 2 right and 0 wrong.
They're really doing great.
They are doing great.
They have really knocked these down.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's like whack-a-mole around here, isn't it?
More successful even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But some people are good at whack-a-mole.
I guess so.
Did you ever play that?
I remember playing it when I was a kid. I don't think I was very good at it.
No, but there are people who specialize
in it. It's a little alarming. It's an alarming game.
There are people who live for whack-a-mole.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Call in next week. Live report, whack-a-mole.
What categories are there?
Oh, sorry. Current events, places, things you should have learned in school, or odds and ends.
Karen?
How about odds and ends?
Odds and ends, okay. Odds and ends. Surprising number of chemicals in the typical urine. This is really surprising, actually. I had no idea. Is it 3,000 chemicals, 4,000, or 5,000? I don't know if this is right. Maybe Epic has got some
that is surprising.
Stats on
it's all
this.
Surprising.
Yeah. Different chemicals in the typical urine. Now, atypical urine would have many more or less, I would think. Maybe like no chemicals in some urine.
Well, the human body is pretty complex, so maybe 5,000?
Boy, it would be hard to believe. Any of these would, but, you know, 5,000.
But what do I know?
Maybe 4,000?
That would also be astounding to me. I would be surprised if there were even 3,000, you know, and I really hadn't thought much about chemicals in the urine, except, you know, I've been tested a couple times. And that was a sesame seed bagel.
For the record.
Which is not usually in there, so that was, you know, so it might have been like, you know, one more than one of these numbers. So what do you think?
Three.
Because even three would be
astounded by three.
3,000 would even be a lot. Yes, 3,000 is right. Holy cow. You won the quiz without actually getting one of the questions right. How typical. We're in that same situation. Should they go
that's
on?
Right.
Should they stop? Should they?
Well, that's a choice they have to make.
Yes.
I think we should go for it.
They're
what
going
do you think,
for it.
Karen?
I think we're doing pretty good. Yeah.
Okay, and he's still in there, right? You know, oh, we got time. Okay. All right, they're going for it. The grand, whatever we call it anymore. The big thing.
Yeah.
The big darn thing.
Yeah.
All of it there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one question, and they got to get it right or wrong.
That's right. And they can choose between current events, places, or things you should have learned in school.
Oh, okay. Okay. Is that you, Becky?
Yeah.
Here?
Yeah, let's do things we should have learned in school.
Okay, this is
all right.
Whales record major life events in one of the following. Is it in their earwax, their blubber, or in little tunes that they hum? Would you like a different category? I've got lots of categories. I don't have to stay with school.
What do you think, Karen?
Well, I don't think they ever figured out why whales sing, did they?
No, so let's eliminate that.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so it's down to earwax or blubber.
Do whales have ears? Would it be,
oh,
would it be
they
blubber?
Sure do. And do they have earwax?
Yeah.
Please, please, please. This is from the group that went out and bought an alpaca on a whim.
So. They seem credible. They seem credible.
Yeah, yeah. Earwax or blubber. You know, they recorded their life events. In other words, they can tell by looking at either their blubber or their earwax what they've been through.
Well, they've always got their blubber.
I've always said that. We always have our blubber, honey.
Yeah, blubber?
Yeah, but not in this context. I never said it.
I think it's earwax.
Wouldn't that be amazing if it were something like earwax? Does that make it such an interesting question?
Well, then let's go with that.
You're thinking earwax?
Earwax?
Earwax, yes, they're earwax. It's like on a tree, the rings of the earwax can tell you what kind of year it was. And, holy cow, they've won it.
Missy, you'll connect with the Dairyland State's amazing cheese culture with outstanding cheeses and their perfect pasture companions at Fermagination on Madison's historic Capitol Square. And then head on over to Genesee Depot for a full estate tour of Ten Chimneys, the National Historic Landmark. Indulge in the opposite of romance in the two-deck card game Brawl Club Foglio from Cheap Ass Games. And listen to the music that might even get Vladimir Putin in the romantic mood on the CD What Do You Know About Rachmaninoff with liner notes by loyal comrade Michael Feldman on Nimbus Records. Karen, you'll become the smartest person on your block overnight, guaranteed, reading What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books. Then dare to show your slightly decadent side, putting your keys on a ring with a pair of authentic jockey mini briefs from Jockey International. Crank up the volume with the Mighty Mulligans on the CD Music to Shank By from R. Paul Rushner and Company. And a whole bunch of other stuff. Next weekend, we will be in Oxford, Mississippi. Tickets available at notmuch.com. Michael Feldman's What Do You
See
Know
you there,
is produced
Oxford.
At Wisconsin Public
Hold
Radio this. For Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international. Adam Friedrichs, our producer, with assistance from Chris Myshock, Lyle Anderson, Martin Babcock, and Diana Cook. Technical director Tom Lane, with help from Aubrey Rouse and Brad
Colbert. It's over. Thank you.
PRI, Public Radio International.